Seeking the Lord's help, we turn to the second book of Kings, chapter 5, verse 20. The fifth chapter in the second book of the Kings and the 20th verse. But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, "Behold, my master have spared Naaman, this Syrian, in not receiving at his hands that which he brought. But as the Lord liveth, I will run after him and take somewhat of him." In this chapter, we see the difference between sovereign grace and sin abounding. In this chapter, we see God bringing about his purposes for the saving of this Syrian. In love and mercy, and his solemn judgments resting upon this man Gehazi. Naaman, the captain of the hosts of Syria, was a great man in his own land, well thought of by the king. He was one who had access to the king, who the king relied upon and looked up to. He was regarded by his fellow Syrians with high esteem, because the Lord had given deliverance of Syria by his hand. He was a mighty man of valor. He was a brave man. He was a fighting man. He had scored many victories for his country. But he was a leper. Leprosy in the days of Naaman was a death sentence. As it ate away at the person whom it infected. This leprosy blighted his whole life. However great he might be in his own land, however near to the king he might be, he couldn't escape the fact, this solemn but he was a leper. He was a sick man. A man facing eternity. And at that time, a man without God, and therefore without hope. He was an idolater, worshipping Rimmon, the god of Syria. That little god who was no god, whom they'd set up to worship. But he was a leper. Why was he a leper? This was the first stage of the Lord's plan to bring Naaman to himself. Had Naaman never been a leper, he never would have gone to Elisha. The The Lord used this means and this way to teach Naaman that there is a God in Israel, and that there is a God in Syria too, and his name isn't Rimmon. The second link in the chain was the sending forth of the Syrian army to take away captives from the land of Israel. And God ordained that at this time, when Naaman was a leper, that a little Israeli maid, a little girl, should be found in Naaman's house. Serving Naaman's wife. And it would appear that this little girl knew something of the God of Israel. And she wasn't afraid, although she was in a foreign heathen land, to speak of him. She didn't hide her witness, and her witness was listened to and obeyed. Do not hide your light under a bushel, even if you be in a heathen company. It doesn't mean you have to speak all the while. But when opportunity is given, do not deliberately hide the fact you are a believer, and that your actions speak louder than your words. And you'll be surprised at who takes notice of you. There was someone who lives a long way from here who was going about their daily calling. And he was rather concerned because he rarely spoke in the workplace. About the things of God. And he happened to be part of a conversation between himself and two or three others who worked there. And the conversation turned to religion. And they scorned religion for various reasons. And then one of them out of the blue turned to this person and said, "It wouldn't surprise me if you were a Christian." And he admitted that he was. But he said to him, "Just out of interest, why did you think so? Because I've never spoken to you about it." He said, "It's your whole life, the way you live. I could tell you're different." Friends, if you are a believer, there will be a difference between you and the world, because you serve God and they do not. Because you will bear forth the fruits of the Spirit, which cannot be hid, and they will bear forth the Spirit, the fruits of the world. And they will notice. They won't like it. They will scorn. They will hate. They'll respect you. There will be that grudging respect, but they won't like it. But if there's no difference between you and the world, then what right have you to call yourself a believer? There was a difference between this Israeli maid and the Syrians around her. And maybe that was one of the reasons why they took notice of what she had said. You see, friends, if our lives are not consistent with what we speak, we will be ignored. And people will not take what we say seriously. Let it be our prayer that our actions and our words complement and not contradict one another. Day by day as you go forth, let it be your prayer that you may be enabled to walk worthy of your God. And so we come to the next link in the chain. What this little maid said was taken notice of by Naaman's wife, by Naaman, and by the king himself. They didn't ignore or scorn her. They listened to her, and it was God's will that they should listen. Because when God has a vessel of mercy to save, he'll move heaven and earth. That person be found in that appointed place where he will meet with them to save them. And so Naaman must go into Israel because God had appointed it. No doubt Naaman had sought many cures in Syria, but none of them had worked. And so out of necessity, because he was a dying man, he goes forth with a letter of introduction from his master to the king of Israel. And yet, we see just how low things were in Israel. The king of Israel was not a man of God. Had he had living faith, he would have known when Naaman was sent to him that he should send for Elisha. But not being a man of faith, he comes to the wrong conclusion that Syria is seeking a quarrel with him and trying to provoke him into war. But Elisha hears of Naaman. How, we're not told. And so the final link in the chain is given. And Elisha sends to the king of Israel and asks him, "Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there was a prophet in Israel." Elisha rebukes him. In effect, he's telling the king of Israel he should have known better than to rent his clothes. He knew there was a prophet in Israel. He knew that God wrought miracles by Elisha. But the king didn't want Elisha's help, really. He was a man who hated Elisha. But again, the hearts of all men are in God's hands. And the king of Israel cannot prevent this man and Elisha from meeting. Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. So Naaman came with his horses and with his chariot and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. It must have been a fine sight. Here is this mighty man of Syria riding in pomp and state and pageantry, with all his attendants. He didn't come alone. He came with servants and probably armed guards as well to escort him. Naturally speaking, it would have been a magnificent sight. And Naaman quite expects, riding in his chariot, as he leaves the king of Israel to go to Elisha's house, he's looking forward to seeing the prophet come out and greet him and acknowledge that he's a great man. He's looking forward to seeing Elisha put his hand upon where his leprosy is and pray to God on his behalf while they all stand round. He's looking forward to being the centre of attention as this Israelite prophet intercedes on behalf of this Syrian. And instead, Elisha sends a messenger saying, "Go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean." Elisha doesn't even go out to meet him. And Naaman feels insulted. He feels he's lost face in front of his servants. And he turns around in a great rage to go back to Syria. Determined that if he'll bathe anywhere, it will be in the rivers of Damascus, because he regards them as being better than all the waters of Israel. Now, why did Elisha deal with Naaman like this? No doubt because God directed him to do so. Elisha was a man of grace and of faith. And I've no doubt whatsoever that when Elisha heard of Naaman, and when he sent for him to come to him, while Naaman was coming, Elisha was praying to seek for divine guidance as to how to deal with him. And it was, I am no doubt whatsoever, the Lord God Almighty that directed Elisha as to how this man was to be healed. It was God who told Elisha to send this messenger, not to go himself. Why? Well, the greater reason God had ordained that Naaman should be found outside his house was that his soul was to be saved. God had a purpose of love and mercy towards him. Had he just had the purpose that this man should be healed in his body, but that his soul be left with the leprosy of sin, then Elisha may have been permitted to go out and fulfill Naaman's dreams. But no. Naaman needs to be taught to be humbled. Naaman needs to be taught that it is God who heals, and that he only uses his prophet and his servant Elisha. But it's God who gave the healing. And remember, beloved friends, that it is God that uses his servants to bless and encourage you. Don't make an idol of the servant. Yes, esteem them highly. Pray for them and love them. But remember, it's God's work. And without him, they're nothing. It's God that must have the glory and honour. And him alone. Naaman had to be taught that God's way is always the best way. Naaman had to be taught that God had a sovereign, absolute right to deal with him in a different way than he thought. Naaman had to be taught that though he may be a great man in the eyes of Syrians, in the eyes of God, he was a poor sinner. And nothing else. Abana and Pharpar might be better rivers than Jordan, but that's not the point. The point is God had appointed that this was the way, that it was to be in Jordan, that Naaman would be taught that God does heal. And his servants give Naaman this good advice to heed what the prophet has said. And the Lord calms Naaman's spirit to listen to them and not to be angry with them, not to take their heads off, as could have happened in it. Remember, friends, Naaman was a heathen man. With these men who had great authority, they did what they wanted, and they thought nothing sometimes of killing those that angered them or got in their way. It was no light matter for these servants to come against him in his anger, but they did. And God intended that they should do so, and God intended that Naaman should hear what they said. And it seems reluctantly, he goes down into Jordan these 7 times. Why? He's a dying man. It was that or death. And on the 7th time, his flesh came again, like unto the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. His leprosy departed from him. 7 times to teach him God's sovereignty. God could have cured him on the 1st time, but that wasn't his will. 7 times to teach him patience. 7 times to teach him that it wasn't the River Jordan of itself that cleaned him up. It was God blessing the means. But what a mercy, how merciful and how faithful God is. In spite of Naaman's rage and pride and anger, God in mercy and faithfulness fulfills his promise. And on the 7th time, Naaman is healed and is no longer a leper. This cloud, which had so long been over him, has been lifted. And this natural healing was sanctified. He's been made now into a little child. He has come face to face with God. He knows that there is a God in Israel. God uses this means to reveal himself to Naaman and to save him by his grace, and he goes back to Elisha, a different man. Yes, he's still in his chariot, but his pride now is all gone. And he returned to the man of God, he and all his company, and came and stood before him. Whereas when he came, he was expecting Elisha to come out to him in his chariot. Perhaps he wasn't going to move from his chariot, he was going to let Elisha come to him and be impressed with his greatness. Now it appears from verse 15 that he left his chariot and went to where Elisha was. See, grace and faith will humble you. It will make you willing to be nothing. It will make you realize you are nothing in God's sight. It will make you realize you are a poor sinner, needing God's mercy, needing God's pardon, needing God's salvation. You and I have the leprosy of sin. And that leprosy has a potential to cast your soul into hellfire. If you are not cured of that leprosy, you will be found in hell at last, to be punished by God for each and every sin that you have committed. When God reveals this to you, he'll humble you to the point where you cry to God for mercy. He'll bring you to be nothing, that Christ may be everything to you. Naaman returns and acknowledges that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. Now therefore, I pray thee, take a blessing of thy servant. He expected to pay for his healing. But Elisha refused, as the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will receive none. And he urged him to take it, but he refused. And Naaman goes away with his talents of silver and gold and changes of raiment to take back. Elisha will not take any payment. Naaman seeks pardon for when he has to go into the house of Rimmon. See, he's a young child of God yet. I don't know if secular history gives us any more light into the life of Naaman. But I wonder if a time did come when grace would not allow him to go into Rimmon with his master. But he goes in peace on his way. So he departed from him a little way. But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, "Behold, my master hath spared Naaman the Syrian. in not receiving at his hand that which he brought, but as the Lord liveth, I will run after him and take somewhat of him. What a different spirit. But Gehazi, Naaman was a Syrian, a Gentile. Gehazi was a Jew with all the benefits of the Jewish nation. Gehazi was the servant of Elisha, the man of God. Elisha had selected Gehazi to be his servant. And so Gehazi must have somehow impressed him. No doubt he knew the words to say. Gehazi would have been brought up in the Jewish faith. But Gehazi was completely destitute of the grace of his master Elisha. Elisha was a man of God, but his servant isn't. But Gehazi, instead of rejoicing that this Syrian has been cleansed of his leprosy, instead of rejoicing that this man has shown evidence that he has been saved by God, all Gehazi can think of is of the money and the raiments which Naaman has brought with him. And he covets after them. He seeks riches. That's where his heart is. That's what he seeks after. He's not seeking after grace. He's not seeking after God's glory and honour. He's seeking after natural riches to make his life easier. But Gehazi, a man who was favoured to be the servant of one of the godliest men who ever lived, probably the godliest man in Israel in that time, who favoured to have his company, who favoured to hear his preaching, who was favoured to see his example, who was favoured to see the miracles that God did by him. And yet, instead of coveting after the grace of Elisha, all Gehazi can desire is the money of Naaman. But Gehazi, he uses Elisha's language. Both of them said, as the Lord liveth. Elisha said, as the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will receive none. Elisha was always conscious that he stood before God, that God saw him. Is that how you live your life? Thou, God, seest me, is how we should live. And that should be both an encouragement and a restraint to us. It should restrain us from sin, knowing that a holy God, whose eyes was a flame of fire, to whom we can conceal nothing, always sees us. Knowing that there is a God whom we are accountable to, and to whom we must give an account of how we have lived our lives. Knowing that there is a God who hates sin, who hates your sin and my sin, and will deal with and punish that sin. God will not ignore it. He will not pretend it doesn't matter. All sin matters. And this is one of the lessons of this chapter. You may think that It was rather harsh for Elisha to put the leprosy of Naaman onto his servant. But again, no doubt he was directed of God to do so. Don't argue with God. God has a sovereign right to do as he will. And it's not for us to question God's judgments. One sin, just one, merits eternal hell, eternal judgment, eternal despair, eternal torment. Just one sin. Remember that. This is one of the lessons here. That sin is not a light thing. It's a solemn thing to disobey God. It's a solemn thing to break the Ten Commandments. Not to keep the Sabbath day holy. To take God's name in vain. To covet all the rest of the commandments that you can read in Exodus 20. Satan has blinded our eyes and hardened our hearts. We grade sin as great or little. In God's eyes, there's no such thing as a little sin. Every soul of man by sinning merits everlasting pain. But the hymn writer goes on. But thy love without beginning formed and fixed salvation's plan. Countless millions shall in life through Jesus reign. Gehazi takes the name of the Lord in vain here. He forgets that he too stands before the Lord. He forgets that he too is accountable to God. And no doubt he has his plans on already what he's going to do with this money, with these raiments. He's planning out how he's going to get rich and be ease, have an easy life. But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, "Behold, my master, the spared name and the Syrian." He seems to look down on him because he's a Syrian. Don't look down on others. Pray for them. Yes, they may not be believers yet at the moment. That doesn't give you a cause to despise them. Rather, pray for them. That their souls may be brought to life. But as the Lord liveth, I will run after him and take somewhat of him. Gehazi is full of covetousness. And that sin then leads on to the sin of deceit. And the sin of taking the Lord's name in vain, as the Lord liveth. And Gehazi follows after Naaman and tells him this story that Elisha has sent him. That's the first sin. Tells him that two young men have come. There's the second lie. And then the third lie, "Give them, I pray thee, a talent of silver and two changes of raiment." Naaman said, "Be content, take 2 talents, and he urged him, and bound 2 talents of silver and 2 bags of 2 changes of garments, and laid them upon 2 of his servants. They bear them before him." Naaman gives willingly. Naaman is grateful. Naaman now has a love for Elisha and is willing to do anything to help him. We know we have passed from death unto life because we love the brethren. Here's one of the fruits of the Spirit here in Naaman. Is that fruit in you and me? Do you love the brethren? If so, then it will be seen by your actions. You will seek to do all you can for them in a practical way, as well as praying for them. When he came to the tower, margin, secret place, he took them from their hand and bestowed them in the house, and he let the men go, and they departed, but he went in and stood before his master. And Elisha said unto him, "Whence comest thou, Gehazi?" And he said, "Thy servant went not whither." Here's the fourth lie. Gehazi forgot to look up. He had taken this property of Naaman's, stolen them really, taken advantage of Naaman, and he'd put them in this secret place where he thought no one could see. Elisha hadn't seen them, others hadn't seen them, but Naaman's servants, and they were safely going back. He thought he was secure and he could carry on and live off what he'd taken and continue to serve Elisha. Be sure your sin will find you out. That which you have sinned in secret, maybe even this very week, and which you've said, "No one else has seen it, it's been done in a secret place." God has seen it, and you will be found out in it. It will be discovered. And if it's not discovered in time, it will be discovered at the judgment seat when God calls you to account. You cannot hide from God. And Elisha said unto him, "Whence comest thou, Gehazi?" He said, "Thy servant went no whither." And he said unto him, "Went not mine heart with thee, when the man turned again from his chariot to meet thee? Is it a time to receive money and to receive garments, and olive yards and vineyards and sheep and oxen and manservants and maidservants, the leprosy? Therefore of Naaman shall cleave unto thee and unto thy seed for ever." And he went out from his presence a leper, as white as snow. No longer was he to be Elisha's servant. He would now have to live on his own as an unclean leper for the rest of his days. Why did God punish him so severely? First of all, because he had marred the type. God, through his servant Elisha, was teaching Naaman this practicable lesson in refusing anything of payment. He was showing to Naaman that grace is free, that God doesn't demand payment when we come to him for mercy, for forgiveness, for pardon. It's all free, it's all of grace, it's all of mercy. You cannot buy salvation. You cannot earn favour with God by your own good works, or by your possessions, or by great wealth. You've got to come with nothing but your sin, and ask God to have mercy upon you for Jesus' sake. And it's those who come with nothing that receive everything. It's those that come with nothing are brought to that point of pardon. Brought to see that the precious blood of Jesus Christ, God's Son, does cleanse from all sin. Brought to see that the righteousness that Jesus lived in his life does avail in heaven for them. But grace is free. And it's God's free gift and sovereign gift to bestow where he will. And therefore you who have got nothing, you who feel to be the chiefest of sinners, the vilest and the worst, go to God with nothing and ask him to have mercy upon you. Ask him to give you pardon and forgiveness and grace. And you'll prove that he still receives sinners and has compassion on them. He still pardons for sin through Jesus' sake. The other reason that Gehazi is punished in this way is because of the way he treated Elisha. Elisha had told Naaman and had stood firm again and again when Naaman oppressed him, and he wasn't going to take payment. And now he's portrayed to Naaman as a man who changes his mind. As a man that doesn't stand by his word. Friends, be careful how you treat the Lord's servants. They're precious in God's sight. And he will not lightly stand by if someone does his servants wrong. Esteem them, pray for them. Remember that they are the Lord's servants, men of God. Learn this lesson from Gehazi's judgment. Be not partaker in Gehazi's sins, but Gehazi, a man who had so much, naturally speaking, who was favoured above many, with the company of the servant of God. And yet he's lost eternally. Naaman, a man who wasn't favoured to be brought up with the sacrifices of God. He wasn't favoured to go to the temple of God. And yet he's saved by grace. His heart is changed. While he's in Israel, and he goes forth back to his own land, like Elisha in Israel, desiring to walk worthy of his God. May God give you and me that same grace. And it may be our desire to remember that we stand before God. May it be our desire to be his servants, to walk worthy of him. Amen.